Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Wednesday, September 4th. I'm Lauren Schmidt reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Wilder Ridge Road fire extinguished, prescribed burn planned in Redway Thursday. Humboldt Harbor District calls for more analysis on billboard replacement. And Cal Poly professor vows to teach in exile despite suspension by university. Stay tuned, news on those stories and more coming right up. A vegetation fire was reported earlier this Wednesday afternoon on Wilder Ridge Road in southern Humboldt between Ettersburg and Honeydew. A call to 911 indicated that an electrical transformer was on fire near the 6200 block of Wilder Ridge Road. The initial report from Air Resources stated that the fire had a slow rate of spread and the potential to grow up to an acre in size. However, as of news time, that fire has been fully suppressed. Tomorrow, there will be fire activity in Redway. However, this incident is prescribed. For more, we spoke with Jeremy Ward, CAL FIRE Battalion Chief with the Humboldt Del Norte Unit.
So yes, tomorrow we are planning to conduct a prescribed burn at our Eel River Conservation Camp, who we operate in conjunction with the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, and that is outside of Redway. The burn is expected to involve approximately 50 acres, primarily grass fuels, but also some timber understory. With that activity and that incident, we do expect that motorists passing by either on Redwood Drive or on the highway will be able to see smoke in the area. And that will continue, for a good portion of the day. We ask that folks not call 911 to report smoke from that area, unless, of course, they feel that it's somewhere else other than that area outside the camp. For folks who are local but don't know exactly where it is, near the dump outside of Redway.
As previously discussed on KMUD News, fire has been part of California's landscape for thousands of years. However, nearly 200 years of fire suppression has created conditions that result in catastrophic wildfires. This is why entities like CAL FIRE are now using fire as a tool.
Fire helps reduce an overabundance of vegetation. So we're using it in a controlled manner to help reduce some of these forest fuels. And there's also other benefits as far as habitat rehabilitation and maintenance. So, if a natural fire came through, it may be able to help clear out and maintain prairie land, whereas if those lands go unchecked and without fire or other types of clearing, those prairies and grasslands can start to disappear as brush and other trees start to move in. So there is that type of benefit as far as the vegetation part of it goes and maintaining those habitats. But also, not just for the plants, but also for animals that live and thrive off of those type of environments.
Multiple firefighting resources will be in place to conduct and maintain the controlled burn. In addition to the benefits of fuel reduction and habitat improvement, these projects provide training opportunities with live fire and allow firefighters to operate within the incident command system.
We often use this and try and get people into some training positions for different fireline leadership type positions and a number of other capacities. There's always logistics and communications and other things that need to occur on these events to make sure that they run smoothly. And it also gives opportunities for firefighters to work with live fire to help expand their experience and their knowledge of how to use fire in other conditions and situations. We do use fire during actual vegetation fires as another tool to help create, a lot of times, what we call black line and help remove fuels between the main vegetation fire and some other type of control line. And basically what that does is it widens the control line without us having to go through and cut hand line or cut dozer line, which can be pretty timely.
In other fire news, recent rains may give the illusion that fire season is over. But on the North Coast, fall is historically the region's peak fire season, despite the seasonal moisture.
Certainly. So, yeah, we did get some rain. We actually got some pretty good amount of rain in a lot of places in the county. And I believe Eureka got record-breaking rain for that day in August. But along with that, it did slow some activity. However, I know one of the days where we got some rain, we had a grass fire in southern Humboldt the very next day. So just to remind folks that, yeah, sometimes we get a little bit of weather, you know, kind of in the later parts of the season like now. But that doesn't mean that it's safe to burn by any means. We'll let people know when it is safe to burn through press releases and through media lines and social media. And we'll also, that'll be updated on the Air Quality's burn hotline. We just do want to remind people that they still need to be following the rules. They still need to be permitted. And if folks are following their permit conditions and calling in on the Air Quality burn line, they'll know when burning is suspended and when the suspension has been lifted. So because of the history here in the county of escape debris burns being a large contributor to our wildland fires, we do try and take enforcement actions. And I generally issue citations for folks that can't follow the rules, especially if those fires spread and cause expenses to the state, as far as us having to come out. And also that puts firefighters at risk every time we have to get on the road, especially for something that's preventable.
As for what else we can expect during the month of September, Ward says.
Right now, they are expecting a pretty good warming trend for a few days. So we do have that, and that is some concern with this always with that warming and drying. And just know that there has been an increase in activity statewide. We do have some resources who are signed out of the area on some larger fires. So anytime that happens, you know, it draws some resources from our local area and places them somewhere else. So always be cautious with fire and think about what you're doing out in these wildland areas before you do it.
More helpful tips are available online at readyforwildfire.org. Tomorrow's prescription is just one project among dozens that have already been completed, and many more that are being planned in southern Humboldt. KMUD's Kelly Lincoln brings us a report on the defensible space projects that were discussed in the August Fire Safe Council meeting.
The Southern Humboldt Fire Safe Council meets tomorrow, Thursday, September 5th at 5 p.m. via Zoom. All residents are encouraged to be involved. Last month, they discussed their involvement in the development of the Countywide Community Wildfire Protection Plan, CWPP. The Southern Humboldt region has more than 60 completed projects it needs to add to the county's plan. Having these projects updated from planned to completed helps each subsequent project to get funding because applicants can more easily show how their project builds on a community-wide effort. Currently, both Humboldt County's Natural Resource Planning Division and Shelter Cove RID are working on two separate defensible space projects in Southern Humboldt for residents who are unable to do the work or unable to pay to have the work done. Tanner Spees wears many hats in Southern Humboldt's fire community. In addition to his role as the Wilder Ridge Fire Chief, he's an environmental analyst with Humboldt County's Public Works Natural Resource Planning Division. The county is coordinating with Bryceland Fire Department's fuel reduction team to do fire fuel work at up to 120 houses in the Bryceland, Whitethorn, and Rettersburg region.
So that's the technicians going to the home, doing a home risk assessment, partly for design for the contractors for the treatment to come in, kind of picking out what hazardous fuels are going to be treated, and then also partially for the education of the resident on what they can do besides the grants, what they can do on their own to make their home more wildfire resistant and fire hardened. So in that project, there's the home risk assessments. And then that's followed up by the defensible space treatment that's done by the Bryceland Fuels crew.
And Spees is also employed by the Trees Foundation as a project coordinator. Shelter Cove's Resort Improvement District received a multi-million-dollar grant for its Shelter Cove Wildfire Resiliency and Community Defense Project.
right? And so they got this grant. It's there's three phases. This is a $6.5 million grant that's going to take place over 5 years. But for phase one, we are working on doing home risk assessments. Again, same kind of idea as part of it is to plan out the hazardous fuels removal. And part of it is an educational outreach tool for the residents to learn about what they can do on their homes to make them more wildfire resilient. And then that's followed up by the defensible space treatment that will be done by contractors, fuels reduction contractors who are contracted through the Shelter Cove RID.
SPEES describes the current prescription in broad terms.
So the prescription, it's not that you don't have any trees in, you know, around your house. So there's the zones, right? There's zone zero, that's 0 to 5 feet away from your house. You don't have any trees within that zone, right? Because there's nothing combustible, but that's 5 feet. That's like very close to your house. And then 5 feet to 30 feet, you can have trees, but they need to be limbed up and all the dead stuff is cleaned off of them. And they don't have brush that can move the fire from below up into the canopy. And then there's some prescription for how close they are, right? Whether they're what they call contiguous, you know, because if you have contiguous trees, then if it gets up into the tree and it lights one tree to the next tree and it becomes, you know, basically a line of fire that can then get to your house or to your neighbor's house.
Having no combustibles within 5 feet of one's house is a recent change to the prescription, and it is a big change. SPEES discussed how the technicians are approaching the topic with landowners.
Before, there wasn't so much awareness of how our landscaping affected the vulnerability of our homes to wildfire. And now the science kind of has, there's been some significant kind of discoveries in these, you know, elements about how we landscape and build our homes that could significantly impact whether your home, actually catches on fire from wildfire embers. You know, our understanding that, you know, people don't always want to just like clear, you know, everything, say from 0 to 5 feet, you know, which is part of the prescription. Sometimes people are attached to like that rose plant that's, you know, in that space. Or basically what we're trying to do is optimize, you know, getting as close as possible to the prescription. But, you know, knowing that we do have to kind of work together with the residents. And then hopefully the idea being that the educational component and kind of adds to this cultural shift where people just start to like, you know, to see that if they are, you know, trying to safeguard their home from wildfire, that, you know, should that plant eventually die or something, maybe don't replant the plant there, you know. And then there's the element too of it's not always just about the plant, it's also about how you take care of it. So, you know, if you have a healthy green plant that is pruned of all of its dead material, it doesn't pose as, you know, as much of a fire, you know, risk, right? So it's about how you take care of it too.
Separately, CAL FIRE is also on the ground in Southern Humboldt doing defensible space inspections and education. SPEES explains how important defensible space is to make sure that firefighters are safe coming into the curtilage to fight fire rather than setting up a perimeter to keep the fire from spreading.
So, you know, they can either go on an offensive strategy and try to put that fire out right at the home, right? Or they can go defensive and try to just contain the danger from further away. So yeah, if there's no good access and it puts firefighters at risk, then they have to consider a defensive strategy. And that means your house is burning down. Whereas if you have good access, a good turnaround and a defensible space, there's a lot better chance they're going to be able to pull up and, you know, put things out and do it in a safe way.
SPEES emphasized there is no element of code enforcement involved in any of the programs for the simple reason that it is counterproductive.
Like, and that's something that's important for people to know. There's no, like, this isn't going to, you know, I think people get kind of confused about, like, say, the county building and planning department, you know, that can do code enforcement. This is not connected to that at all. You know, there's no connection to that. But that they understand that if they started doing that, people would just close their gates, you know, and they don't want that. They want, you know, most of these, like, the primary element, I think, for it is the education, you know, to the residents. you know, because that's the biggest component that's going to help, you know, safety in the future.
Homeowners in the Shelter Cove Ridd District who want an inspection and to apply for help with the treatment work can reach out to the Trees Foundation and ask to speak with Tanner Spees, while homeowners in the Bryceland, Whitethorn, and Edersburg area can reach out to the Bryceland Fire Department. And this is Kelly Lincoln reporting for KMUD News.
Humboldt County health officials warn of a possible Shigella exposure at a Eureka event. In a press release issued this Wednesday, Humboldt County Department of Health and Human Services is advising residents who attended a dinner at the Elks Lodge in Eureka on August 28th that they may have been exposed to Shigella, a highly contagious bacterial infection. Public health officials report that 6 people in the county have tested positive for Shigella since August, and cases continue to rise. Humboldt County Health Officer Dr. Candy Stockton says 3 new cases, as well as 5 suspected cases, have been linked to the August 28th event. Symptoms of Shigella include fever, stomach cramps, and diarrhea. Individuals experiencing gastrointestinal issues are encouraged to contact their healthcare provider and avoid spreading the infection by staying home. Health officials emphasize the importance of washing hands regularly, especially after using the bathroom and before preparing food, as the bacteria can be spread through contaminated food, water, and surfaces. For more information, or if you are experiencing symptoms of Shigella, you can contact Public Health at 707-268-2181. The replacement of a fallen Humboldt Bay billboard will get more scrutiny from the county's Harbor District, KMUD's Daniel Mintz reports.
Billboards along the shoreline of Humboldt Bay are controversial, and the county's Harbor District has held off on permitting the replacement of one that blew down last winter. Owned by Outfront Media, which operates billboards nationwide, the damaged billboard is off Highway 101 South, immediately adjacent to the Indianola cutoff. The billboard repair requires permits from a number of agencies, including the county and the Harbor District. Repairs to billboards are allowed if they don't exceed the scale of what was damaged. Once repaired, the billboards can be operated only for a period of time, enough to recover costs. Those details were outlined when the Harbor District's Board of Commissioners considered the permitting at an August 28th special meeting. District Director Rob Homeland explained the permit and how it fits in with the district ordinance.
Bit of summary of how we've gotten here. A legally nonconforming billboard located within tidally influenced portions of Humboldt Bay was damaged during the winter storms this past January. The owner of the billboard is seeking a permit to conduct a like-for-like repair to restore that billboard. If approved, permit before you would allow that repair and implement Amendment 2 to Ordinance Number 7 of the Harbor District. By permitting the continued operation of the billboard for a 5-year amortization period, after which the billboard would be removed. So the board adopted Amendment 2 to Ordinance 7 in 2021 that declared pre-existing billboards non-conforming, required non-conforming billboards to receive a district permit, and there established a rebuttable amortization period for the removal.
During a public comment period, Jen Kalt of Humboldt Waterkeeper said the proposed repair is not a like-for-like repair, and the damaged billboard can no longer be considered as existing. Another issue challenging the billboard reconstruction is that it could conflict with the soon-to-be-launched construction of the southern segment of the Humboldt Bay Trail, which Kalt noted.
One of our concerns is that the construction work on this project would interrupt the Bay Trail, the use of the Bay Trail. And we didn't see any encroachment permit from the owner of the right-of-way, which is the State of California Great Redwood Trail Agency. as you know, people have been working for decades to get this trail completed, and it's almost complete. The billboard owners' application and permits and their practices to date have always accessed these billboards by driving out onto the railroad tracks, and that's what it says. They will drive out onto the railroad tracks. You may notice there's no railroad tracks there anymore. They've been completely removed.
Also during public comment, former Arcata Council member Dave Meserve described the billboard repair effort as absurd.
Let's be out front about this. This is really ridiculous. When you look at the ordinances that are on the books, they make it very clear that the intention of the ordinances is to get rid of the billboards that are in the viewshed of the bay, or that certainly that are in the waters of the bay. As I came past tonight, it was in probably 3 feet of water. That's why it blew over. And, you know, the whole intention is no permit shall authorize a billboard without first considering the impact of the proposed use on the air, water, land, environment, and ecology of the district lands, and finding that the proposed use is necessary to promote the safety, health, comfort, and public convenience of the public, and that the proposed use is required by the public convenience, and that the proposed use will not have an adverse environmental or ecological effect. In what way does a billboard benefit the public? The billboard only benefits the owner of the billboard collecting the rent for it and obstructing our views of the bay.
Dealing with multiple issues, commissioners unanimously voted to hold off on taking action. Commissioner Stephen Kuhlman said he doesn't believe there's enough evidence to make the findings required for permit approval. He motioned for the vote, which calls for an initial study to be done, and sets November 10th as the date when the permit will be taken up again. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
A suspended Cal Poly Humboldt professor has taken to the streets to continue teaching after being banned from campus. Ryan Hudson has the story.
After being arrested alongside student protesters at Cal Poly Humboldt last April, Dr. Ruhollah Agisala has been suspended with pay pending an investigation by the university into the professor's role during the week of protests for Palestine on campus. This, despite the district attorney dropping all charges against the professor, who was notified of the extended suspension just before the start of school. I caught up with Professor Agisala at the first class held in exile at the edge of campus in Arcata.
I came here today because teaching is part of my identity. I have taught since I graduated from high school, even before that I was tutoring. And this fall, unfortunately, I wasn't able to officially be on the schedule and teach on campus. So I'm using public spaces and whatever resources that I have, and people help to bring chairs and tables to sit down and to discuss what we read and what we learned today. This is not about me. This is about well-being of campus and community. Even my little communications with the admin about reinstating me and lifting suspensions was not a self-advocacy. It was more a concern about a well-being and restoring the trust that was disrupted in the spring by the previous administration.
With the thinly veiled threat of termination looming, rather than sit by idly, the professor has decided to teach in public. Ruhollah Agisala said their class would be taught in exile under the large Josiah Lawson mural at the edge of the university campus in Arcata. Dr. Agisala explained to us how they got arrested and what happened at Cal Poly that led to their suspension.
I got involved after I witnessed students were assaulted on the night of April 22nd. Um, And then as the protest continued, I was worried that the students will continue to be harmed by the forceful presence of law enforcement on campus and the threat that we continue to receive from the chancellor's office and from the admin. I joined the students and I stayed with them for the rest of the week to make sure their message is being heard, their voices are being conveyed in a way that was meant. I facilitated some meetings between the students and the admin. And I was also worried about the students being assaulted by law enforcement. That's why I stayed till the last minute and I got arrested along with the students.
How did it feel? What was it like?
So most of us were sitting in a circle peacefully. And they were the ones who were terrified. They were the ones who were armed and militarized. And they arrived with the most forceful messages and appearance that they could have. The message from the interim chief of police, Peter Chris, was that they will come with tear gas, rubber bullets, and plastic bullets.
You may also be subject to other police action, including the use of kinetic energy projectiles and chemical agents, which include rubber bullets, plastic bullets, and CFs. Use of these devices could result in serious injury.
So for some young people who were not militant, who were not armed, who were not even showing any violence, that level of militarization was a surprise. The level of escalation and the rate of escalation was shocking. They engaged with the students' peaceful protest violently. They didn't listen to a students' demands, and they escalated and they responded to that forcefully and violently. They did not engage with faculty input. They did not include community input, and they made decisions that were not the best for the community.
If all of our demands are not met, if the administration, as they have said they will, continue to ignore negotiations and choose to just fail pretty much, if all that we achieved from this, if all we continue to achieve from this is bringing hope and showing the people of Palestine that we are solid in our resolve against their genocide, then I am happy.
Currently, Professor Ruhollah Aghisala is banned from campus, locked out of their office, and even forbidden from speaking to students until the university decides if they are to be terminated or to be reinstated as a professor of graduate studies at the School of Education at Cal Poly Humboldt.
We support freedom of speech.
Let Dr. Ruhollah teach.
We support freedom of speech.
Let Dr. Ruhollah teach.
Professor Ruhollah Aghisala plans to continue teaching their class in exile, open to the public, while students and professors in support of Dr. Aghisala tell me that they will continue to keep protesting in support of Professor Aghisala's ability to maintain a presence on campus and continue teaching their classes.
A campus member just reminded me of the sign that I have on my door that says, that's a quote from Audre Lorde, a feminist scholar, who said, "My silence hasn't protected me, and your silence won't protect you." So I encourage my students and myself and remind myself that to speak up if something is not right, you keep quiet, you do not help solving that problem.
Multiple requests for comment to the university have gone unanswered for this story. For more details on this reporting, you can find the full article online at redheadedblackbelt@kimkemp.com. For KMUD News, this is Ryan Hudson.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Larry Lashley. And thanks to our reporters, Kelly Lincoln, Daniel Mintz, and Ryan Hudson. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Lauren Schmidt.